Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to be giving three commentaries, all short, and I'd like your response. First, from Joe Brewer, why consumer marketing will eventually end. Then, happiness levels falling in Europe. The experts are urging governments to respond. And finally, it's official, the rich declare war on the middle class, by Robert Freeman from Common Dreams. Those are our commentaries. On health and nutrition, the latest on how to lower your cancer risk for breast cancer by 32%, what you can do to ward off the common cold. Also, got a stomach ache? What could be the reason? And what happens if you get a daily dose of beet juice? Also, if you were thinking the cholesterol and eggs aren't a problem, I'll show you why they are. And more in depth about metabolic syndrome. Millions, tens of millions of Americans suffer from it. I'll be describing what Dr. Stephen Jovell, has to say about it and how we can correct it. Plus, during the entire program, we'll be taking your calls. Our number, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And then, join me in about a half hour, will be Dr. Martin Feldman, Ask the Doctor segment. So we have a lot to share with you. Let's get started. And again, we will be taking calls, and I'd like your input and comments. Let me begin with our commentaries because it'll give you something to think about. And by the way, tomorrow at my noon show on all the stations, I'm going to do a commentary that'll be a real mind twist for you. It's all about the way that we construct our thoughts in society and why it's so difficult to get people who are wrong, either on the left or the right, rich or poor, educated or not, to change their minds. Why are we so resistant even when it's in our best interest to change? That'll be tomorrow's commentary. That'll be an in-depth commentary. A few weeks ago, by the way, I'm sure many of you saw this. There was something that someone set me up on YouTube, and I've been busy working on manuscripts, filming a documentary on Poverty Inc. and helping with the homeless. And it showed a series of major mall stores opening on Black Friday and the people pouring in, running, pushing, stampeding, just like you would expect in some of those soccer games in South America where people stampede and people are killed. And for what reason? To buy something? And the irony of it is, if you think that what you were going to buy won't be there in an hour or 6 hours or all day, think again. These stores have an enormous inventory, just waiting for the ones that are sold on the shelf to be replaced by those that are in the back. So when I'm looking at this country and all these people shopping, and I'm thinking, do they have the money? Are they putting it on their credit cards? Do they need it? Clearly, most of these things we don't need. But then you ask why. A few weeks ago, I suggested neuromarketing may be the ultimate threat to democracy because people's unconscious brain processes can be manipulated, and that can shape political outcomes, economic outcomes, educational outcomes, religious outcomes. In the context of today's pressing challenges, this is terrible news. Now more than ever, we need a functioning electorate that can collaborate effectively to address the foundational design flaws of the global economy and save human civilization from utter ruin in the face of imminent ecological collapse. Following this line of thinking, I'd like to explain why a long view can help us understand how to deal with consumer marketing and its harmful impacts on society. Let's start with the economic forces that cause marketing to come into existence in the first place. The birth of mass marketing. Throughout most of human history, people who engaged in trade did so face-to-face at a local marketplace. Yesterday morning, I was down at the farmer's market on 14th Street, had a chance to stop by the person who was selling the mushrooms and talk about how long it took, what kind of varieties did well or didn't. Do the mushrooms grow the same 12 months a year? I grow mushrooms on my farm, and I know my experiences. I was interested in theirs. The man who does the sprouts was there, and I asked him how things were going. And then the very expensive place, I don't like spending the money because it's like $9 for a couple of ounces of microgreens. But microgreens are delicious, and they really spruce up a meal. But all these people you look at, you're seeing them eye to eye. You can speak with them. You can get some feedback. And generally, they're very nice people. And again, you're also supporting local marketing, local direct eye-to-eye contact with someone who's developing something, making something, or selling it right there. Not something shipped in from Honduras or Chile or Australia. Why do we need cherries in the middle of the winter? Buy them frozen. They're just as tasty when they thaw. In any case, so all this went on, and there was no pressure to develop significant brand relationships because buyers and products were engaging, so whatever you needed, someone would manufacture. And you develop some interpersonal relationships. More fundamentally, there wasn't enough supply for everyone's needs. People went hungry from when crops failed, and they lived in squalor when building materials were scarce. It wasn't until the steam engine was built that industrialization scaled enough to provide sufficient supply to meet market demands. But then something happened that has shaped global economic development ever since. It became possible to generate more stuff than people needed, at least among those who had the money to pay for it. This led to the problem of excess supply. Now, Peter Barnes, in his insightful book, Capitalism 3.0, called this early period Capitalism 1, defined by a perpetual demand for essential services that greatly exceeded what could be supplied. He called the second phase Capitalism 2, because supply exceeded demand and people needed to be persuaded to buy junk or whatever they were buying. And then mass marketing was born. Throughout the last century, marketing tactics have been used to cultivate consumer culture. This was deemed necessary to provide an engine for economic growth as population increased and there was greater demand for wealth creation. This is why gross domestic product is a measure of economic well-being, because it tells us how successful marketing has been at getting people to buy products. But there's a hidden flaw that threatens us all. And this is the part I want you to think about and respond to. The operating assumption of 20th century economics, contrary to what is taught about scarcity with regards to opportunity cost, is that there is an endless abundance of raw materials. We will never run out. We have all the trees and water and soil and food, so we can feed the perpetual growth engine of the global economy. You could have 100 billion people on the planet. No problem. We have the supplies and the beginning product to get it to you. There's only one problem. It's a blatant lie. Everything I just said is completely wrong. And now we're experiencing the consequences. We live on a finite planet that contains very limited amounts of renewable and non-renewable resources. No amount of ingenuity can increase the amount of land, rare earth metals, fresh water, or other vital inputs for a healthy society than that which the earth is able to create through its vast web of ecosystems. We are now entering the third phase of economic development, where supply is constrained by rapidly depleting resources. During this phase, the business model behind consumer marketing will become untenable, non-sustainable. Getting people to buy more doesn't work when there's not enough to go around anymore. So consumer marketing, as we know it today, has a shelf life. It has an expiration date. It simply cannot continue indefinitely on a finite planet. So the good news is that consumer culture is going to go away, like it or not. The bad news is that it may persist too long and drive massive overconsumption of vital resources until there just isn't enough left to be replenished for future use. This would result in a huge die-off of people, including Americans, no longer able to get the food, water, and shelter they need to survive. So perhaps we shouldn't wait for the big Monday coming when it's the biggest day of the year shopping online, or Black Friday when people stampede over each other in order to get something they don't need to begin with, just so they can say they save some money. No, we're going to have to pull back from consumer marketing. There's a serious need to redesign our economy, our concept of what we need to be happy, to look at our environment and say, gee whiz, we're all connected to it and has natural limits, and that there's an interdependency of economical and ecological systems. And therefore, I believe that we have to, in effect, start now. Now, just today in the New York Times, there was an article about how China has been building two new coal-powered plants per week. We haven't had one in the last 2 years because of those of us in the environmental movement who have shown how dirty coal is, how toxic it is, how much global warming it causes. So on that level, we're good. China, on the other hand, comes from the concept that no individual will ever be held accountable for any mistakes that they make. There's just too many people making mistakes, and they have too much power. And it's a corrupt country. Not the average person, but the government is completely corrupt. Corrupt and insensitive. That's a lethal combination. And by the way, do you remember a year ago on this program I said Russia would eat itself alive because the entire Russian government is based upon corruption and corruption with organized crime? Today, WikiLeaks gave out the cables of the embassies, and it said exactly that, word for word. Now what you have is you have China. Now just hear me out here and see where I'm going with this. China is the top dog on the deck right now. It's using more oil, more coal, more precious minerals than any other country in the world. The trouble is there is a limit, but it doesn't want to limit anything. So it's the largest purchaser of land. It's going into Africa, South America, Russia, and it's buying gigantic tracts of land so it can plant its food or whatever its or mining interest to export back. Not good, because when you destroy the rainforest, you're going to cause massive drought. And the entire balance, a very delicate balance of having so much water, will be changed. Yesterday there was a program, and typical of all the networks, they do not use any real scholarship. They use these talking heads who come from these foundations who are almost all pro-corporate, pro-globalization. Don't worry, all the water we use, we'll get it back. No, we won't. And the water you're getting back is not clean water. Right now, over 1.5 billion people on the planet don't have clean water. Within the next 10 years, 3 billion won't. Also, we're using more water that's not replenishable because it was taken from underground aquifers that are prehistoric, and there's no way to replenish those. So when it's gone, it's gone. And a lot of this water's going at a very rapid rate. It'll be gone the next 5 to 10 years in the United States. It won't be replaced. You would have to bring water in from the Great Lakes to the central part of the country, to the breadbasket, Kansas, Iowa, in order to Indiana, in order to have things growing, because the aquifer there is already 6% gone. So misinformation abounds. But here's the bad part of this. They have found the largest coal reserves in the world in Alaska, but also out in Montana, Wyoming, up in that part of the United States. So now they're going to go in there and they're going to mine that because there's 3 billion tons of coal that they can use immediately.
And it's the kind of coal that they like, low sulfur coal. Who they're going to give it to? China. So now that China used to export coal, now it's importing it. China does not have anything in adequate amounts in their own country. It is having to import everything. It's a gigantic consumption vortex. So now we're going to be exporting our coal, ravaging our states in order for people to capitalize without anyone asking, why should we be supplying coal? Why not go towards wind, ocean currents, what's called wave energy, geothermal, which we have plenty of? No, they're still addicted to this. So it all comes down to consuming. They're consuming natural resources so they can create products that can be sold cheaply around the world, including the United States. They're number one person that buys from them. So when you say no to buying something you don't need, when you say no to buying any product from China, you're also helping the environment. And then start to look in your own life and ask yourself, what would it be like to say no to your own impulses to buy things? And then to spend that same time doing something that gave you joy and happiness and pleasure. That's my thought. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. That's the commentary. And here's one other one you can address also. Gee whiz, how would you figure this one out? This is from Science Daily. Quote, emotional prosperity in Europe is falling, and this troubling fact needs to be faced by the European governments. That is the conclusion from a new research report from the University of Warwick, which documents cross-country evidence on psychological health and well-being, published in the journal, British Journal of Industrial Relations. Well, let's just see. Ireland was really booming. And someone said 4 years ago, Gary, why don't you buy land over there and do your project over there? And I said, no, it's a bubble. Bubble? No. Yeah, it's a bubble. It's going to collapse and the entire economy is going to go flat. It collapsed. The economy's gone flat. And now they have $110 billion debt that they have to pay. Who are they paying it to? The banks. Who has to pay it? The taxpayers. How are they going to pay it? Take away 20 to 25% of all the social services and increase their taxes. But wait a second. Didn't the banks cause the problem? Yeah. So you're giving the people caused the problem the money back, making them whole? Yeah. So why are you doing that? Why don't you do in Argentina and simply default? Go off the euro and save people from suffering and cause a national austerity program to get back to basics and get back to reality. They should do that. They won't. Just like Greece should have done it and didn't. But Greece is a little country, a little economy. Ireland is a very, very small economy. But Spain, that's the seventh largest economy in the world. They're going to need $1 trillion or more. Portugal, they'll need a lot. But then Italy and France and England will all fall in the next 12 months into deep debt and have to be bailed out. You're looking at $5 trillion. They don't have that much money in all of Europe. So they're unhappy? Yeah, for good reason. And I don't think it's the government's responsibility to try to get them happy. I think it's the people's responsibility to get rid of their governments and get rid of their debt and not bail out a single bank or Wall Street firm ever again. I said at the beginning of this crisis that we should allow every single Wall Street firm to go broke. We'd be better off. Now, take a look at what had happened with that $13 trillion we gave Wall Street and didn't get a nickel for the average person. Now maybe they're waking up. Back in a moment with your thoughts. Give us a call. 888-874-4888.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. Yes, baby. Ooh, how sweet.
Now, let's go to some of the issues that are important and can save lives. 32% reduction in your breast cancer rate if you take fish oil. This is the latest study, and it's from the University of Texas at Houston MD Anderson Cancer Center, and it says, regularly taking a fish oil supplement may lower the risk of breast cancer substantially. Quote, this study is one of the largest studies that have come out showing that there may be a role for fish oil in the prevention of cancer, specifically breast cancer. They followed 35,000 postmenopausal women who were aged 50 to 76 and who took part in this 10-year study. It's called the Vitamins Lifestyle Study. So for those of you who want to lower your breast cancer risk by 32%, and this is not a lot of fish oil. This was only 1 gram a day. I'm suggesting 3, and that's just one nutrient. I'm suggesting if you added to the fish oil curcumin at 800 milligrams twice a day and vitamin C 5 to 10,000 milligrams a day, you could also help prevent breast cancer. Next up, you think eggs are okay everywhere you look. You see people eating all kinds of eggs. Think again. This is the latest from Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, published in the Canadian Journal of Cardiology. Quote, consuming eggs is not as harmless as some reports claim. A new study showed that cholesterol in one single egg, exceeds the maximum amount recommended by the American Heart Association and the National Cholesterol Education Program. Both recommend less than 200 milligrams per day for people at risk of cardiovascular disease. So, most people don't eat one egg. They eat two or three eggs. Eat an omelet, you're generally eating 3 eggs. So, you are tripling the amount of cholesterol that you should be taking in that's dangerous to your health. What's one of the most common reasons for stomach aches in the United States? Well, according to this study, and this is a American College of Gastroenterology at their scientific meeting, they said it's fructose. That's right, fructose. Common, it's in so many foods and soft drinks, high fructose corn syrup. Researchers, Dr. Lustig and Abdullah, pediatric gastroenterologist at Mary Bridge Children's Hospital, Tacoma, Washington. They looked at 245 children between 2 and 18 with unexplained chronic abdominal pain alone or associated with constipation, gas, or bloating, and diarrhea. What they found was that they had high levels of corn syrup. Quote, with the widespread use of high fructose corn syrup, it is difficult to avoid, so the challenge is finding those foods with low fructose and still maintain a healthy nutritional balance that patients will adhere to, especially teenagers. I would agree with that. Good news is, last week I lectured at a school in New Jersey, and they've agreed, based upon that lecture, to eliminate soft drinks and candy in the school, and to start the day with fresh organic grapefruit juice, vegetable juice, protein shake, apple juice, or grape juice. Give them a choice. And then later in the day, when they get their break, allow them to have that juice again. At the end of 3 months, if that's accepted by the students and they like it, and they're reporting less hyperactive reactions in class, then a whole healthy food program will be implemented. And that's good. Next up, beet juice. Beet juice promotes brain health, especially in older individuals. Why? Because it's very rich in nitric oxide. And in the peer-reviewed journal, Nitric Oxide Biology and Chemistry, it showed that beet juice is rich, rich, rich. And by the way, if it's rich in nitric oxide, that would make it a natural Viagra. So for those in the audience who are having erectile dysfunction, now you got something natural that won't cause your problems. Beet juice, 16 ounces. Quote, high nitrate breakfast. And finally, on the health and nutrition, taking vitamin E can help lower dementia risk. This was 5,400 Dutch adults age 55 or older. And when they took the vitamin E,
and they took it from mixed tocopherols, and they didn't take high doses of it. It equals about 400 units. I would have suggested 800 units. They found substantially less dementia because you're getting superoxygenation of the brain and the blood, and that's good. Now, what I promised to tell you about the common cold and exercise, what they found is during a 12-week period, the people who exercised at least 5 days a week had 43% fewer days with an upper respiratory tract infection than those who did not. That was done at Appalachian State University down in North Carolina. So exercising, power walking, power biking, running, swimming every day will help reduce your efforts of a cold. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. My final commentary of the evening before we go to Dr. Martin Feldman and your calls. Robert Friedman, it's official. The rich declare war on the middle class. I found this interesting. I'm quoting it. For the past 30 years, the rich have been waging war on the middle class. It's been astonishingly effective, partly because it's been undeclared. But even that pretense is now being abandoned. The President's National Deficit Commission has effectively declared that the rich will now go after what is left of working middle-class wealth and will take whatever steps are necessary to seize it. If allowed to succeed, their plan will reduce Americans to a state of serfdom. Ronald Reagan began the war on the middle class with his supply-side economics. Its very purpose, according to David Stockman, Reagan's budget director, was to transfer wealth and income upwards. It cut the marginal tax rate on the highest income earners from 75 to 35% while dramatically expanding spending for war. The results were twofold: massive federal debt and an astonishing rise in the share of income and wealth going to those who are already the wealthiest people in the world. The national debt quadrupled between 1980 and 1992. George Bush would repeat Reagan's policies and double it again between 2000 and 2008. Meanwhile, the share of national income going to the top 1% more than doubled, from 9% to 24%. The share going to the top 1/10th of 1% of income earners more than tripled. We now have the most uneven distribution of income in the developing world, and the inequality is growing rapidly. Shifts of this magnitude over such short periods of time have never been seen in American history. With the rich getting much, much, much richer, it means that everybody else is getting poorer. And in fact, real wages for medium workers are lower today than they were in 1973. Indeed, while the inflation-adjusted income of the bottom fifth of workers fell by $6,900 between 1979 and 2007, the top 1% saw their annual income increase by $741,000. To try to keep up with living standards, Americans resorted to debt. They increased their personal debt-to-income ratio from 62% in 1980 to 130% in 2008. And when housing prices fell 35% nationwide in the recent collapse, it left Americans with a smaller share of equity in their homes, 48%, than at any time since the Great Depression. The share that they have lost was taken by the banks. In other words, all the income and wealth gains for middle Americans from the golden years, 1945 to 1975, were wiped out, or more accurately, have been transferred to the very rich. The top 1% holds 34% of all of America's wealth, while the bottom 50% holds just 2%. And the bottom 40% of Americans, they own nothing, zero. These effects numbers can be numbing, even dizzying, but it's important to understand that they have not been the result of random events or impersonal marketing forces. Rather, they have followed as the intended consequences of the relentless application of a wide array of government and industry policies. The massive run-up in debt is one such policy. The wealthy are net lenders. This means that massive public and private debt transfers interest income to them from the rest of the economy. Another method for affecting massive wealth transfer. Beginning in 1981, the Reagan administration effectively stopped enforcing antitrust laws, allowing monopolies to gouge everyone who had to buy their products and couldn't buy anyone else's. The government actually provided tax subsidies so that the corporations could eliminate jobs in the industrial heartland and ship them to Mexico and later to China and India and other low-wage countries, reducing wages and pitting American workers against each other for those jobs remaining. The bank deregulation that began in the early 1980s reached its apex with the repeal of the Depression-era Glass-Steagall Act in the late 90s under Bill Clinton. This set up the casino capitalism of the next decade that would spawn massive criminality and mortgage fraud by the nation's leading banks, none of which has been prosecuted. The result was the greatest economic collapse since the Great Depression. But even as far than more than 5 million homeowners have lost their homes, and figure 4 people per home, that's 20 million, the wealthy had their losses covered by the Bush and later Obama administrations. Bloomberg News estimates that the transfer to the banks through the financial bailout is $13 trillion. I could go on with a roster of ways the wealthy have used the government to transfer national wealth to themselves. Environmental and health laws that are not enforced, deals with the pharmaceutical industry so that they don't have to compete with foreign manufacturers, healthcare reform that forces tens of millions of Americans to buy questionable insurance products, even as insurers continue to kick legitimate claimants off their rolls, giveaways of the telecommunications spectrum worth hundreds of billions of dollars to media monopolies that ladle out state propaganda as if it were news and never, ever challenged. In these and thousands of other ways, the rich have conspired with the government they largely control to shift more and more of the nation's wealth away from the working and middle classes to themselves. It amounts to the most insidious class warfare and the most rapacious looting of public and private resources in the history of the world. The result is vast impoverishment, demoralization, and the destruction of the American middle class. 1 out of 8 Americans are on food stamps. 1 out of 5 people are in official poverty. 1 out of every 4 children is in poverty. 25 million Americans cannot find work, and while their skills atrophy and their families and communities are destroyed. These are not figures describing a banana republic, a disaster-stricken region. This is not Haiti after the earthquake or a third world country. I'm describing the United States of America after 3 decades of plunder by the rich, and now they want to go for the kill. Not satisfied with the staggering wealth that they have already siphoned away, the ultra-rich are now using Barack Obama's National Deficit Commission to propose even more brazen plunder, and the looting is no longer taking place behind closed doors. The commission proposed to cut the federal government's budget deficit by $4 trillion over the next decade, but 75% of the so-called savings will come from gutting programs that help stabilize the middle class in their communities. None of it comes from policies that would cause the rich to have to give back a nickel. For example, the commission proposed cutting the tax deduction on mortgage payments. Not only will this render housing much less affordable for millions of prospective homebuyers, it will reduce housing prices, perhaps substantially. For without the tax write-off, buyers will be able to afford much less house. This will decimate the sole source of wealth for tens of millions of Americans. It is housing wealth that undergirds retirement security in the middle class, or at least it did until 4 out of 5 homemakers went underwater on their mortgages in the recent bank trigger collapse. Then, even as the commission plans to decimate home prices and owner equity, it proposes cutting back benefits to Social Security. I suggest you tell your legislators no more and see it for what it is and stop listening to the people like Sean Hannity and others who will say anything to defend the corporate whores of America. These people have no shame. Then again, they have no decency. They have no ethics. They wrap themselves in a flag. They're out there looking for the next Joe McCarthy to support. My God, have we fallen this low? Yeah, we have. And we're going to continue to fall even lower. When I tell you we're about to take a beating of unimaginable complications, watch what happens over the next 2 years to the average American. They found their voice. 100,000 raised hell in Ireland today. That won't do a thing as long as they allow that country to be bailed out. They should not. They should default. Get out of the corrupt, stupid, vile, perverse European Union and reclaim the integrity of a once great nation and phenomenal people. They're fighters. We're not. Well, unless I missed it. Did we miss anything? Was there a protest of homelessness, of children who are hungry, of wars that we shouldn't be in, of foreclosures that shouldn't happen? No. We're sitting on the sidelines in some opium stupor of consumerism. Back in a moment. Your thoughts. Call in. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Like sweet morning dew, I took one look at you, and it was plain to see.
Nice to have you with us. Let's say hello to Mary from Queens. Hi, Mary. Mary, you're on the phone.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I just want to give everybody a reminder that the food safety bill is going to be voted on tomorrow. And you can go on healthfreedomusa.org if you want to vote against it.
If you want to vote against it, if you don't vote against it, you're not going to have any organic food to eat. The whole bill, Mary, the food safety bill, is a fraud. The legislative whores who sold their soul so that they could get corporate interest are supporting it, saying no to Senate Bill 510, the food safety bill.
It's healthfreedomusa.org.
Good. Thank you. Let's say hello to Dr. Martin Feldman. He's asked the doctor. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. Good topic for tonight.
Okay.
We talk about a major problem in American medicine. Many people out in the audience will have this problem. That is gastric reflux, also called GERD, G-E-R-D. G-E-R-D is a medical term. And I'm going to go through the symptoms, the mechanism, why I get the symptoms, the direct natural therapies, how to repair the stomach, and what medical tests you might consider. So first off, let's deal with symptoms of this problem. This is commonly what might be called a heartburn. Heartburn that goes up toward the throat in the center of the chest, moving upward. And that can be very painful, and that's a heartburn relating to a backflow of the stomach contents backflowing backwards up toward the throat. And they irritate the throat. The throat is very painful, and you have the heartburn. Now, most of the medical world will say, well, the problem is it's too much stomach acid, and therefore we have to give you these horrible drugs, such as the whole bunch of them. Tagamet, Pepcid, Zantac is one bunch, and Nexium, Prevacid is another bunch, two separate bunches. They do give you a little relief, but the whole thing is mixed up because the problem is not too little stomach acid. It's actually fixing that acid problem is backwards, because what's happening is food that's entering the stomach actually ferments into an unnatural acid. It's not the natural acid the stomach is making on its own. It's a foreign acid. That fermented acid is what causes the trouble. It's not the stomach acid itself. In fact, it may be in many patients, stomach acid is actually deficient, allowing this fermentation to occur. Also, there's another issue, which is hiatal hernia. Now, hiatal hernia is often diagnosed after various tests, and then the physicians have no way to treat it. If we fix this whole issue, getting the stomach to work better, have no fermentation in the stomach, have no backflow, hiatal hernia will actually be much, it will either go away or be much improved. Occasionally, there's pain a little bit more toward the right side, but this is rare, and it could be gallbladder, but that's a separate topic, and that's relatively minor, relatively rare compared to the GERD. The GERD is very, very common. Now, what do we do about all this? Well, there are certain direct things we can do, and that would be very, very simple. I'm going to go through this very carefully because it's very important. First off would be extract of DGL, all caps, extract of DGL, very, very helpful for the stomach to kind of get back on track. It soothes the stomach, it soothes the esophagus, helps the whole stomach process. Very, very simple stuff, inexpensive, available over the counter, either chewable or otherwise. Very, very simple. Next would be aloe vera itself. Aloe vera, same concept. Aloe vera is reasonably attainable over the counter. There are many products out there. Many are very excellent, very, very helpful for this problem. Next would be marshmallow herb, M-A-R-S-H-M-A-L-L-O-W, marshmallow, not marshmallow, marshmallow herb. Glutamine next, G-L-U-T-A-M-I-N-E, glutamine, very, very helpful for this whole problem. Cabbage juice, that would be very, very perfect, cabbage juice. But again, not the darn medications, because they make the stomach worse, because they prevent the stomach from repairing itself. Now, we can consider doing a therapeutic trial with pancreatic enzymes to see what happens, but I would not recommend people just take stomach acid on their own, even though in many cases the problem of this fermented acid is actually a diminished HCl, not excess HCl, but still I would not take HCl on my own. That should be under supervision, because if you have an ulcer in your stomach and you take the HCl, it could be a big problem. But we could try pancreatic enzymes, and again, these are available over-the-counter, inexpensive, very, very safe. And they can be tried just to see what happens. If it helps the whole process, good. If it doesn't, then it's more that the stomach needs a lot more work. Now, there are a few little simple things you could do, but it's just sort of incidental. You could sleep on your left side with the head of the bed elevated about 6 inches. That's just to get a little relief until we get this whole thing figured out and fixed. People with obesity have much more problems with this than people who are not obese. And if the hiatal hernia is there, it could be that the stomach, which is not functioning properly and or has these medications on board, the Tagamets and all those bad guys, then the stomach is working extra mechanically. It has to need the food. It has to squish the food and do extra mechanical work, and it's not ready for that. And then it can push itself up through the esophageal sphincter up into the esophagus, causing this trouble, the hiatal hernia. But it's more often than not a stomach malfunction, and it can be repealed. And very commonly, if we have a chiropractor who knows what he or she is doing, that would be part of the way to fix the hiatal hernia and also get the stomach back on track. Now, beyond that, we should consider what's beyond all what we've just said. Commonly, the person with low stomach acid and the fermented food in the stomach has low zinc. Very, very common. Most of the time, we test the zinc, we find that the zinc is deficient. Sometimes we have to add actually Celtic sea salt or other salt to make HCl. If the stomach acid HCl is diminished, we may need to have some HCl from salt to help with that process. But more important are the next two. Food allergy, incredible frequent issue regarding this whole stomach irritation and the GERD and the poor digestion in the stomach and the reflux and the whole business. Food allergy testing is a little complicated. The food tests out there are not perfect. The best would be IgG or ALCAT, A-L-C-A-T, but they are imperfect. And one other way would be elimination of the food for 6 to 9 days, reintroduce the food and see what happens. Food allergy is a major issue regarding stomach function and especially for all this GERD. Now, what about medical testing? What's really important, what's not? if this problem doesn't repair easily, from all what I've just said, the specifics of what we went through in detail, if it doesn't repair easily, or if there's certainly, let's say, if it's very, very, very severe, endoscope, endoscopy is a safe test. It's a bit of a nuisance because it involves a tube going down into your stomach, but it's otherwise safe and can give us data, especially can give us data as to the cell wall, cells of the esophagus, who may be irritated from this GERD, from the reflux coming in. And also we can look and see if there are any ulcers in the stomach itself, which is always a possibility. And third, we can get a biopsy to see if there's any H. pylori, which is a bacterium, on the stomach wall. So we have here a problem of misconception. It's commonly not too much stomach acid that the stomach is making, commonly the reverse. We have all these good ways to get the stomach back on track, and I would say in the majority of patients, if they do all this natural stuff, they don't need any of those Tagamet, Pepcid, Xantex, and a whole bunch of bad guys.
Good. Very good information, Marty. Dr. Martin Feldman can be at 212-744-4413, 212-744-4413. He's board-certified in neurology, and he's a holistic physician. Now, in the remainder of the program, we're going to open up to any question that you have now on health, nutrition, or anything else that's important to you. Give us a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And while you're calling in, let me give you our last piece of information concerning metabolic syndrome. Just think of it this way. If you knew someone who dropped dead of a heart attack or being crippled by some catastrophic stroke, even having limbs amputated, which I've seen my own friends have their limbs amputated, more often than not, this is a result of peripheral vascular disease. And these are just some of the frightening consequences of vascular disease. It's our number one disease killer in the United States. Well, metabolic syndrome and its associated condition of insulin resistance pose a major threat to cardiovascular health that most healthcare practitioners do not even discuss with their patients. Remarkably, the public knows very little about this silent but deadly condition. Now, to avoid potentially disastrous cardiovascular consequences of metabolic syndrome, you need to understand that you can do some good things. You can, and it's not that difficult. It's really basic. For example, you've got to get the weight down. You've got to get your blood triglycerides down. You want to get your blood pressure down, and you want to get your fasting glucose down. I would suggest your fasting glucose no more than 100, your blood pressure no more than 130 over 85, and that would be at the high end. Your HDL in men, 40 mg. Women, 50. Fasting blood triglycerides, 150 mg. And for men, I would suggest that your percentage of body fat not exceed about 15%. Women, I would say don't exceed 17%, and that would be on the high side. You need healthy body composition. And for that, fruits, vegetables, grains, and exercise. The man who has poor body composition, meaning low lean muscle and high fat tissue, you're carrying around that fat, and that's a risk of developing insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome. Same is true for women. So body max is max. Get the fat down and get yourself on a good program. Good supplementation, the essential fatty acids. Chromium is critical in helping for glucose control. Chromium picolinate, 200 micrograms three times a day, that helps insulin shuttle blood sugar into cells. In fact, without chromium, insulin cannot work properly. And then you also want to make sure you're taking adequate vitamin C. It makes a big difference as well. So get your vitamin C in there. And also DHEA. Low levels of DHEA are associated with a high risk of metabolic syndrome. So I'm suggesting DHEA for men and women. And it should be individualized in its dosing, and you can get a blood test to determine what it is. And the simple blood test known as DHEA sulfate will provide important information about that. So exercise, good diet, get your percentage of body fat down, your lean muscle tissue up, take the chromium and vitamin C, DHEA. Nothing that complicated. Simple. And it can save some lives. Let's say hello to Rick from Manhattan. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Good.
I recently had a blood test, and my vitamin D levels are extremely low. I work overnight, so I'm usually sleeping during the day when the sun is out, and then again, it's wintertime, so that's already shortened. So what could I do besides the supplement? Is there anything else that I can do to increase it? My levels were at number 12.
Yeah, that's low. Well, first of all, working night, especially during this time of year, you're not going to be exposed to sunlight. And anyone who is not exposed to adequate sunlight also will suffer from seasonal affective disorder or SAD. You need sunlight. So make sure at least at work that you're using full spectrum light bulbs. That will help. And there's even a simple light you can sit in front of for about 20 minutes at a time that will help produce this, and that will help rebalance brain chemistry. Then taking vitamin D, it should always be taken. Take vitamin D 2 or 3 at about 2,000 units with calcium and magnesium from citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, at about 800 units to 1,000 units, milligrams, I should say. And then boron, 5 milligrams of boron. And that will also make a difference. I would also take some quercetin at about 500 milligrams each time and 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C at the same time and take quercetin. All that works synergistically, along with vitamin K2 at 5 milligrams. And then when you do lie down, sometime I imagine in the morning, since your night shift, take about 3 milligrams of melatonin. And that will help as well. Okay, and it shouldn't take you more than about a month to see your vitamin D levels come up, and that will help protect you against infections, helps protect your heart. It's very important for you on all levels. It's very crucial to your immune system. In fact, just by itself, vitamin D can help prevent flu and colds from manifesting in the body. Okay, all the best. Now, I'm going to take one more call here at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Then we're going to jump over and see what Mike Rupert is talking about tonight on his program. And he always has an interesting topic, and he follows my show here on the Progressive Radio Network. Tomorrow, I'm going to do a real powerful commentary. You won't want to miss it. So make sure you listen in. Vonnie from New York. Hi, Vonnie. You're on the air. Speak up, please. Not hearing anything. Let's just see. Do we have my engineer, do I have a problem? No, she just hung up. All right. Okay. Let's go over and say hello to Michael Rupert. Or do we have Vonnie back on the line? Someone's...
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, I just wanted to ask you, I've read some places saying that the niacin flush is actually healthy and good to have that experience. Do you agree with that, or should you try to take just enough that you don't actually have that?
It depends upon what you're taking it for. If you have liver conditions, you don't want to take a high level of niacin, 2,000-3,000 milligrams. But let's say that you're suffering from some form of allergy, or let's say migraine headaches, then taking it up to flush is fine. But a lot of people wouldn't understand what a flush is, and they would freak out. Your skin turns red, it begins to itch, you feel like your head is pulsing. So since most people have never experienced that, and having that artificially induced, it could cause them to panic. So the only time I would suggest someone do a niacin flush, especially children who have been diagnosed with ADD and ADHD and trying to get them off Ritalin or other what amounts to speed, because that's what they are, they're amphetamines like dexedrine, then niacin can make a difference. Also in college students, instead of taking Adderall, they should be taking some niacin because it accomplishes getting hyperoxygenation into the brain and circulation, and that at least allows them to be far more alert. So that would be good. Trying to get a coke addict off cocaine, niacin is also used, and effectively, frequently, and as long as you're also using inositol choline at very high doses, about 1,000 milligrams. I've gotten a lot of coke addicts off coke and meth addicts off meth. That's how I would suggest. Okay? All the best to you. Now let's see if we have Mike Rupert on. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing, man?
Doing great. What's up tonight?
Well, I see. Now, I was all prepared for you to pull a name switch on me to make me spit my tea out, and you didn't do it. So, okay. So, I'm safe anyway. We're great tonight. We're going to have a really good show that's kind of encouraging for me. We have our guest is Tim Drake of a school called Primitive Pursuits in Ithaca, New York, not far from where you guys are, sponsored by Cornell. And what they do is a wilderness training for children. And it's about teaching children survival skills and about how to prepare them and instill in them the confidence that they can function in a world without all of the modern conveniences. It's a pretty encouraging theme for me, so I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Well, thank you. We look forward to listening to you. That's Michael Rupert, whose program follows this in just about 60 seconds. Thank you all for listening tonight. I look forward to sharing a lot with you tomorrow at noon and again at 3.